Right, we're holding on your Gimel Amud Aleph by the first Mishnah. Continuing on this topic, we started yesterday with a Mishnah with a case where the Chassan has a Tainus Psulim and she has a counterclaim. She makes a body claim, we said. She makes a definite claim. In that case, it was that after the Erusin, I was Nanas, and that's why I'm not a Basula. He say, maybe not, and we had a Macholikus between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer on the one hand, Rabbi Yeshua on the other, whether we believe her or not. Another such case, he ametas mukas eitzani. If she says the reason I'm not a basula is because I was mukas eitz, I was injured by wood. He says no, you had relations with a man. Again, we're talking body versus shema. He's not saying for sure, I know, but he's suspecting that may be the case. Now here we're talking about it would be before the erusin. He's not saying you're also to me, but he's arguing that I was misled. I was when I did Eidosin with you, I was led to believe that you're a Basula, and now I'm now that I find that you're not, I'm not sure I have reason to suspect that it happened beforehand. So again, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Menes, again they say that you believe her, either because of the body of the Shema or because we'll talk later in our Gemara whether she has a Migri in this case. Rabbi Yeshua, Melem Epiyah Nechai, and again, Rabbi Yeshua says we don't live from her mouth, meaning it's not necessarily is she telling the truth. Ella Harez B'chazkas Zeruth Asish, so no, rather she has the chazaka that, in fact, it was through relations with a man, until she brings proof otherwise.
What's the difference between this case and the previous case?
Because the previous case was that they're both agreeing that she had relations with somebody, and they're both agreeing that it was non-consensual, that it was an onus. The difference is, there it was, he was claiming it happened before the Erusin, therefore it was a Mechachtos. I wouldn't have done Kiddushin if I had known that you're no longer a Basula. She's arguing it happened after the Erusin. Here, we'll talk about in the Gemara, we're going to see now in the Gemara what exactly are they arguing about. Again, if she's a Mukas 8, it goes back to the question we had yesterday or the day before, does a Mukas 8 get 200 or 100?
The difference between this case and the previous case is
the previous case was that they both agreed that it was a matter of Durus Asish, that she had been with a man. The question was whether it was before or after the Erusin. Here it's a question whether Bechlal she was ever whether Bechlal she ever had relations or whether she was in Mukaseh. So that's the question. Tana Sayer Humai, the Gemara asks, what is he claiming he's responsible for, and what is she claiming she's entitled to? Rabbi Yochanan of Masayim Amanes. So Rabbi Yochanan says they're arguing 200 versus 100. She's arguing I'm a Mukaseit, therefore, and therefore I'm entitled to 200. Rabbi Lazar, not Rabbi Lazar. Rabbi Yochanan is saying so she's claiming I'm a Mukaseit and I'm entitled to 200. He's arguing Durus Asishat, you're Ba'ula, therefore you're only entitled to 100. Rabbi Lazar, I'm a Bemana V'loy Klum. Whereas Rabbi Lazar says the argument between them, she's saying, I get a mona. He's saying, you shouldn't get anything. So the question is, why? So what's the difference? Rabbi Yochanan Amar Masayim Mona Savalak Rabbi Meir. Because we had 2 days ago, we had the Machloikas of Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, on Motzei Shabbos actually, we had whether a Mukas 8 is entitled to, whether a Mukas 8 gets 200 or 100. We said Rav Meir says she gets 200 because he compares her to, a Begera, so Begera gets 200, even though her Basulim are not perfect because nothing actually happened. The here of the Mukas 8 is similar because there was no relations with a man. And the Chachamim say only 100. So Rav Yochanan holds, like Rav Meir, he said, we said in the Gemara I discussed over there, that we said in the end, according to Rava over there, that it doesn't matter whether he knew beforehand or not that she was a Mukas 8. Either way, Rav Meir says she's entitled to 200. So therefore, she's arguing over here, Mukas 8, Sani. Therefore, I'm still entitled to 200. You didn't know about it beforehand? Okay, but that doesn't change things. Rav Elazar says the argument between them is whether she gets a mana or whether she gets nothing, because Savala Kirabanan. Rav Elazar holds like the Rabbanan, Yami Bein Hikuba Bein Lehikuba Mana. Again, we said in that same section of the Gemara, on Yud Aleph Amud Beis, that according to the Rabbanan, there's no question a Mukaseit never gets 200. The maximum she could get is 100. But so therefore, so she's arguing. I get 100. He's arguing it was a mekach tos. You shouldn't get. I shouldn't be on the hook for anything.
So Rebbe Eliezer implicitly hears her claim.
Yeah. Well, what do you mean he hears?
He agrees with her. I mean.
No. Rebbe Yochanan and Rebbe Eliezer are arguing in our Mishnah over here. When she's saying mukas eitzani, what is she claiming? Is she claiming 200 or 100? And when he says loikia ledrusas ishat, is he claiming 100 or is he claiming nothing? That's the machlokes. So bishlam Rebbe Eliezer like amak Rebbe Yochanan. I can understand then why Rebbe Eliezer doesn't want to understand the Mishnah like Rebbe Yochanan, that it's 200 versus 100 to come up with Rabbanan. Very simple. He wants to say our Mishnah should be according to the Rabbanan. We established the other day that the halacha is like the Rabbanan. So obviously Rebbe Eliezer wants to say that our Mishnah is a libid hilchos that follows the actual final halacha. Ella Rebbe Yochanan in my time alo amak Rebbe Eliezer. Why indeed does Rebbe Yochanan not agree with Rebbe Eliezer? Because he holds, as we discussed yesterday, that in general, if a man marries a woman and thinking that she's a basula, and it turns out that she's a basula, yeshlok subamana, that she indeed is entitled to a ksuba of 100. Now, you have to ask, hacha, who ka amamana, but he ka amramana. So in that case, if even according to the husband, even if he claims drusas ishat, still, according to Rabbi Yochanan's understanding of the situation, she'd be entitled to a mana. So if he's effectively claiming a mana and she's claiming a mana, ma'ika ben tainu didei l'tainu didah, then what would be the difference? If we're saying, if the Mishnah is mentioning that they have claims, that they have conflicting claims, obviously that means they have to be arguing, they have to be, it's not just, I mean, we're not just talking about they're going to Beis Din and arguing what actually happened. If it doesn't have any practical consequences, that's neither here nor there.
In other words, they should disagree on the amount.
That's the thing. So they obviously have to be disagreeing on the amount. If they're disagreeing on the amount, then obviously the only way they could be disagreeing on the amount is if the Mishnah indeed is according to the mayor, that as a mukaseh, she should be entitled to 200. So that's why Rabbi Yochanan is forced to say that our Mishnah goes according to the mayor. Okay, we can understand Rebbe Eliezer's position. This is why we need two Mishnayos. Like you were just asking what's the Chiddush of our Mishnah over the previous one. Not so much what's the Chiddush of the two cases. Okay, they're two different cases. One is Nansa and the other one is Mukas Eitz versus Drusas Ish. But the real question is, why do both Mishnayos need to mention the Machloikis between Rebbe Gamliel and Rebbe Eliezer versus Rebbe Yeshua? So, according to Rebbe Eliezer, we understand Hainan Chatoni Tauti, that's why we need two Mishnayos, Chod to tell us this Machloikas, Chod la Poki bid Rami Bar Chama, one to tell us not like Rami Bar Chama, which we said before Rami Bar Chama had mentioned the idea that Reb Meir and the Rabbanon disagree on the situation, what would be the din if he knew of the condition beforehand versus did not, that Rami Bar Chama had said there should be a difference in that, and we disproved him, in fact, from our Mishnah. So one Mishnah we need to tell us the case, and we need to have the machloikas in order to tell us not like Rami Bar Chama's understanding
in this Mishnah.
And the other, the previous Mishnah, would come to tell us not like Rav Chiya Bar Oven's understanding in the name of Rav Sheshes, which also we discussed yesterday, or on Motzei Shabbos actually we discussed that that Rav Chiya Bar Oven had quoted in the name of Rav Sheshes at what Rabbi Yochanan is saying over here, that if you marry a woman thinking she's a basula and it turns out she's a ba'ula, she gets a mana. Rabbi Eliezer would say the previous Mishnah, which used the expression b'haya mechti mekach tos, is specifically telling us not like that. Because again, according to Rabbi Eliezer, in this Mishnah and also in the previous one, by implication, the argument between the husband and the wife is she getting 200, is she getting 100, or is she getting 0? So that would be, according to him, therefore, you need two Mishnayos to tell us that not to understand things the way that Rami Bar Chama understood them, that there should be a difference whether he knew or not, and also not like Rav Chiya Bar Oven, that there should be a difference that she's entitled to she's entitled to a mana no matter what, even if she really was a Bo'ola. But according to Rav Yochanan, why do you need two Mishnayos? If according to Rav Yochanan in this Mishnah, she's arguing 200, he's arguing 100, so what is this Mishnah adding over the previous one? The answer is, we need the two Mishnayos because in both of them we do need the Machloikas between Rabbi Gamliel versus Rabbi Yeshua, because in each one we have to show how far each of them goes with his opinion. in both of these Mishnayos, and also in the next couple, but for now we're focusing on these two, Rav Gamliel and Rav Eliezer are saying you believe her, and Rabbi Yeshua is saying So, Kamaisa Lahidiyach HaKoychad Rabbi Yeshua. So the first Mishnah, we have to show how far Rabbi Yeshua is going. That even though, as we said in the previous Mishnah, she has a migui claim, she could have claimed, instead of claiming that I was nenas, she could have claimed I was a mukas eitz, which is beneficial for her because then it would make her able to marry a kohen later on. And yet we said, Rabbi Yeshua says we don't believe her. No, we still don't believe her. Whereas Basraisa, our Mishnah would be like Diach HaKoycha D'Ram Gamliel. Our Mishnah would be going the other way around. It would be telling us how far Ram Gamliel goes. Da'afagav D'Lech L'Meim Amigoy, on the contrary. In our Mishnah, she doesn't have a Amigoy because she's already making the maximum claim. She's already saying, Mukas Eitz, you can't get any better than that. And yet, Mehemna, yet Ram Gamliel still believes her. In theory, we mentioned yesterday that she could have a Amigoy stolen our Mishnah. Instead of claiming Mukas Eitz, she could claim Mukas Eitz Anitaktecha. That happened after we were already engaged, after the Erusin. The difference is, though, according to Rabbi Yochanan. He's saying that she's claiming I got 200 as a Mukas Eitz. So in that case, it doesn't matter. According to him, it doesn't matter whether it happened before or after the Erusin. Either way, she's entitled to 200. So therefore, there's no migui over here. There's no better claim that she can have than Mukas Eitz. Saying Mukas Eitz Anitaktecha is not any stronger than plain old Mukas Eitz.
According to Rabbi Yochanan.
Well, that's what we're talking about, according to Rabbi Yochanan. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yochanan's understanding of the Mishnah, she doesn't have a migui, and yet Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer believe her. That's why we need our Mishnah.
And the halacha is that we don't accept the finest Mukas Eitz, so we do accept
the halacha. The halacha in all of these Mishnayos is according to Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer, that Nehemenes, we believe her.
The finest Mukas Eitz is a good time. Even when he says Pesach Pesach.
Well, he says Pesach Pesach Madlazi. Okay, but she's
there.
I mean, that's because
here he has a tainus body. Here it's a tainus shem.
No, so there. But here it's the other way around. She's saying body. That definitely it was Mukas Eitz. He's saying maybe not. Maybe Zeros Hashish. So either because of the body of Hashemah, or in the first Mishnah because of the Migui, or we also said there's the matter of Chazaka. We said there is also the matter of Chazaka, that she had a Chazaka being a Basula beforehand, and therefore we should assume, no, okay, no, our mission actually doesn't really apply. That doesn't really apply. That's more the previous mission with before or after the Erusin is the case, maybe. No, here it's just the matter of Bori versus Shema. Yes, he's saying Pesach Pasuach Matzasi. Sure, that's a Bori. But why is it Pesach Pasuach? That itself, he only has a Shema claim. Why? They're both agreeing on the fact Pesach Pasuach Matzasi. That fact is not in dispute.
What about
same idea. It's not in dispute. Fine, Lema Tzasi Dam, but they both agree to that basic fact. But why is it? She's claiming a Bari, he's claiming a Shema. Bari v'Shema, Bari Adi.
Are we talking one after each other?
Well, I mean, for purposes of our mission, it doesn't really matter. Either way, there's no claim of oinus or anything. He's claiming drusas ish at, not again, not to say you're also to me, but just to say that it was a mekach tos, that according to Rabbi Yochanan that you should only get 100, and according to Rabbi Lazar that you shouldn't be getting anything.
I remember recalling that minus mukas eitz is not an acceptable.
We said the other day that we can't usually assume. We can't usually, no, if she, no, 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 we said that, if she herself is not counterclaiming, then we can't assume, when we figure out the Sfex Faker, when he's saying Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, and we have to figure the Sfex Faker, maybe it was willingly, maybe not, maybe it was before, maybe it was after, we don't factor in Mukas Eitz over there because that's a rare thing. But here, where she herself is actually claiming Mukas Eitz, fine, that's a valid taina. We ourselves can't assume it when we're trying to figure out the sfeikus of what happened. We can't factor that in as one of the sides of the suffix. But if she herself claims that that's what happened, then okay, that's what happened.
As opposed to over there, where
she wasn't claiming it, and if we're trying to figure out is she also to him or not, then we can only consider actual bias.
And money and Yisrael don't go together.
Not necessarily, but again, there she wasn't claiming anything. She didn't. In the original case, we started Pesach Pasuach Matzasi on Dafkes. The case was that she wasn't counterclaiming anything. So then all we have is his, all we have is his taina. Here we have two tainas to deal with.
To indicate that Mukha says can only be raised if she says Mukha says.
Well, yeah, if he himself knows that it was Mukha says, then of course there's no argument in the first place. Yeah. We'll talk about it afterwards, maybe. Okay. Mishnah continues. Now, this Mishnah over here doesn't really directly connect with the previous ones as far, because we're not talking in this Mishnah, and really from here till pretty much the end of the Perek, we're kind of going off the topic of arguments about what you're entitled to or not entitled to of the Ksuba. But since we have these cases where we have a machlokes where Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer say you believe her, and Rabbi Yeshua is saying Lame Pia Anuchayin, so we have another such case. Cases, Ra'um and Daberas in Echad, they saw a woman speaking with somebody, and we'll talk about in the Gemara what speaking means for this purpose. Ba'amrullah, and they asked her, Mativa Shal Ishzeh, what's the status of this person, what kind of person is he? And she answers, Ishplaini v'koyinhu, it's so-and-so, and he is a koyin, which doesn't necessarily mean he doesn't literally have to be a koyin, just means, in other words, she's saying he's a miyuchas, he's not a mamzer or nothing or something. So again, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Eliezer, Amim Ne'emenes, if we believe her, therefore she's not possible to kohuna. Rabbi Yeshua, Amim Elayim Epi Anuchayin, Rabbi Yeshua, Amim Elayim Epi Anuchayin, and again, Rabbi Yeshua says we don't live off her mouth, we can't necessarily say that she's telling the truth. Ela ha-rezu b'cheskes ba'ula l'nothin l'mamzer, so no, she has a chazakah at this point that she's had relations with a nothin or a mamzer, ad she'tavi ra'ayu l'dvarah, unless she brings proof otherwise. And the interesting thing is,
saw her talk to him.
No, that's why the Gemara is going to talk about it. We don't just mean talking, obviously. Okay. Just talking wouldn't be enough to ask her. No, we're going to talk about in the Gemara what it means exactly. Yeah. Wait. The point, by the way, is that Rabbi Yeshua is saying that we have to be concerned that it's a Nasin or a Mamzer, even though not very many people in the world are Nasinim or Mamzerim. So the Gemara is going to explain that Rabbi Yeshua is picky about this kind of thing. Another case, Hosam Mulberis, if you have a woman that's pregnant, an unmarried girl, obviously. And they ask her what's the story with this baby, who is it from? And she answers, it's from so-and-so, who is a Koyin. Again, doesn't have to be a Koyin, but she means he's a miyuchas, and therefore she's arguing that she herself is still allowed to marry a Koyin. She hasn't become a halala or a zoino or what have you to be possible to a Koyin. Whether she's talking about the child also we'll get to in the Gemara. Rabbi Gamliel of Rabbi Elazar Amim Ne'emenes, Rabbi Yeshua Amim Pia Anuchayin, same machlokes. Ela ha'rezu b'cheskes mu'beres l'nosim l'mamzer. So Rabbi Yeshua says, no, we consider there's a chazaka, therefore, that she's pregnant from a nothin or a mamzer, ad she'tavi ra'ayu l'dvarah, unless she brings proof otherwise. So the first question, my medaberes, what do we mean by speaking? Obviously, just talking to somebody there is not going to answer her. Z'iri oman nistira. So Z'iri says it means that she was secluded with him, which means we don't necessarily have any evidence that any bi'ila happened. But the fact that she was secluded with him is enough to already, according to Rabbi Yeshua, to pass over from marrying Kohen. Wait. Rabasi oman nivala. Rabasi says it means that she actually had relations. We actually have eidos, not necessarily as the Gemara mentions in Makkos, we talked about before, that the Edim, when we talk about Edim of Nivala, we don't mean that they literally have to see Kamitzchel v'Shveferes, the cab A going to slot B. We mean that they're seeing them Kederach HaManafin. They see them in a position like lovers. Anyway. So, Bishleim l'Z'iri, Hainan Katani Medaberes. Okay, according to Z'iri, we can understand why the Mishnah uses the expression speaking. It means, in other words, they're secluded together, like they're talking privately, they're talking like lovers talk in a private area. El Rabasi Mai Medaberes, but according to Rabasi, that means actually Ila, what kind of expression Medaberes? And the answer is Lishna Malia. The Mishnah is using a nicer euphemism, a nicer expression. As we find similarly in a pasuk, that the pasuk uses eating as a euphemism for having relations. It talks about a woman, isha mina efes, a woman who's unfaithful to her husband. The pasuk says, ochlo machasapia, she eats, meaning she has relations, or machasapia, she wipes her mouth, panel shal mata, that is. But amra, and she says, lo yipalti oven, I didn't do anything wrong. So the same way as eating can be used as a euphemism for that, so can midaberes. A couple of interesting things about it. Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out in his notes in the back of the Gemara that it could be the Shodesh Diber, Dalet Beis Reish, besides meaning to speak, can also mean like to be led. Yad ber amim pertenu. The Eibishter will make the goyim be led by us. Limayis Hamashiach. So in our Mishnah, we could say, we could punctuate it like that. Ra'ua midaberes im echad. We see that she's being led by somebody. Like, we can see that there's an actual relationship between them. They're not just stop talking in the street. Which is why the Gemara is saying that we can use that as a euphemism for Be'ilo or for Stira. In a whole bunch of places in Chassidus, mostly in various Maimonides of the Mithil Rebbe, he talks about the idea that we see from this Mishnah and from this Gemara that there's a certain connection between Dibur and Tainug. Because if we're talking Ma'im Daberes means Nivala, that's Tainug, and therefore it's associated, among other things, with the idea that with Tainug, with Ava. This is why the importance of speaking the words of davening, that we evoke and develop our love for the Eibishter in that way.
It's associated with our Arayos.
Yeah, but here with in Chassidus, it talks about more in the positive sense that we see, therefore, the close and deep connection there is between Tainug and speaking and Dibur. Yeah. There's a vort brought in Kesher Shem Tov from the Baal Shem Tov, Ra'ua Medaberesim Echad, that it says that it's appropriate that you should see a person speaking of Echad. It should be, you're walking in the street, you're talking with somebody in the street, and you're talking about Echad, you're talking about the Eibishter. Yeah. Anyway, Nishlemel Ze'iri, so okay, going further, according to Ze'iri, you can understand, according to Ze'iri, who says the first part of the Mishnah is talking about Nistera, that she was secluded with this guy, but there's no evidence of Be'ila. Heiner de Katani Tauti. Then that's why the Mishnah has to give us two cases, Medaberes and Muberes. So one case we'd be talking about, there was only Stira. The second case, she's pregnant, so obviously there was Bia. And therefore, we'd have to say that Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua argue on both cases. El Rab Asi Tauti Lomali. According to Rab Asi, what do you need two cases for? If according to him, Medaberes means Nivala, so what is Muberes adding? The answer is Chod Lahakshaba, but Chod Lahakshaba Bita. One case is talking about that Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer are saying that she herself is kosher to marry a Kohen. The other one is they're saying that if the baby turns out to be a daughter, according to Rabbi Gamliel, that daughter is also kosher to marry a Kohen. We need both of those cases. Otherwise, we would have thought like this. What's one reason why Rabbi Gamliel is believing her? Because she had a chazakah beforehand. We said in the first Mishnah of this series, we said yesterday that she has a chazakah. She had a chazakah of being a besula. Here, similarly, she had a chazakah of being kosher l'kohuna at one point. We want to take away that chazakah. You can't do that without solid evidence. The daughter, on the other hand, never had a cheskas kashrus in the first place. So you could, if you didn't have the second case, you could argue that Rabbi Gamliel and you could argue Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer are saying yes, her will still give her cheskas kashrus. But the daughter, maybe Misafik, is possible Kohana. She doesn't have that chazaka. And that's why we have to say that. So the question is, Hanukhalam under Omar. So, okay, that works well according to the opinion, which we'll have on Amud Beis, with Dubri Amachshir, Bamachshir, Bitta, that the opinion, Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer, who say that she's kosher, also holds her daughter as kosher. What are you going to do according to the opinion, which we'll have, again, we'll have an Amud Beis, that even Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer, who hold that she herself remains kosher l'kohuna, the daughter is still possible for this reason, because the daughter doesn't have a cheskes kashrus. Ma'ikal meima, what are you going to say on that? Why would the Mishnah have to be telling us two cases? And not only why would the Mishnah, given that the second case is not telling us that the daughter is kosher according to them, so the second case is just repeating the first case according to Rabasi. She had relations. The second case, obviously she had relations because she's pregnant. And in both cases, we're saying that Rabbi Gamliel holds she's kosher. But what's the second case adding? The answer is very simple. Rabasi, Sava, Commander Amma, Kibladi, Ramakshav, Makshav, Abita. Good. Rabasi holds according to the opinion that understands Rabbi Gamliel to be saying that not only she, but also the daughter is kosher. So that's how he understands the Mishnah. So therefore, yes, he understands the second case. It's telling us not that the mother is kosher l'kohuna, that we know from the first case, but that the daughter is kosher l'kohuna.
Who are the different Mishnahs?
So we'll have on Amud Beis. We have Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. We have Rabbi Yochanan versus Rabbi Lazar. Rabbi Yochanan versus Rabbi Lazar. So Rabbi Lazar is the one who said that even Rabbi Gamliel, who holds that she's kosher, holds the daughter is possible. So good, Rabbi Asi doesn't have to hold according to that. Rabbi Asi can hold like a Rabbi Yochanan. going back with Ze'iri, okay, let's go back to Ze'iri's opinion. So he's saying that the word medaberes in our Mishnah means she's just secluded with this guy. There's no evidence that they actually did bia. And you're telling us Rabbi Yeshua is saying we don't believe her, and we may have to assume that not only she had relations with this guy, but that this guy was posel, and therefore they make her posel korna. The question is, how is that? Ha'omer Rav, didn't Rav say Malkun ala Yichud vein Oisrin ala Yichud? That you do give Malkus, which Rashi says means Makas Maudus, so Malkus at Midrabanan, at the discretion of Beis Din, for Yichud. So if you have a man and a woman who are unrelated on Yichud together, then you give them Malkus, you give them Petch as a punishment for that. They ain't Oisrin ala Yichud, but you don't say if a woman was secluded with somebody else, not her husband, you don't after her to her husband because of that. You do if there was kinui beforehand. If the husband had warned her, the famous thing from Sota, Alti Sosri Mish Pliny, don't seclude yourself with Pliny, and she does, that makes her a Sota. That's a whole other matter. But in an ordinary case, a woman is secluded with somebody else, there was no kinui. Rav is saying you don't ask her to her husband just because of Yichud.
Any kind of issue.
What do you mean, any kind of issue?
You don't
say that she's also to her husband, in other words.
Right.
And by the same logic over here, why? So, in other words, we don't say because she was in Yichud with this guy, therefore we have to assume there was Be'ila. Blame it, the like Rabbi Yeshua. So does that mean that Rav's opinion is not like Rabbi Yeshua? According to Rabbi Yeshua, in our Mishnah, it sounds like just because there was Yichud, you're already assuming that there was Be'ila. The answer is, Afilu Tamer Rabbi Yeshua. No, you could even say that Rav is following Rabbi Yeshua. That because you could say, Maila also B'yuchsin. Rabbi Yeshua would say, yes, you're not going to ordinarily ask a woman to her husband or say that we assume that she had relations. We're not going to do that just based on Yichud. But when it comes to Yuchsin, when it comes to the Dinim of Kahuna, we are going to be Machmer on that kind of thing. We want to make a Maila. We want to make an extra special assumption, basically. We want to be absolutely certain that a Kohen is marrying somebody who he's allowed to. So therefore, yes, we'll be Machmer in this case, even though we're Makel in the normal case. Tosfos discusses over here the issue that this whole din about Malkin ala Yichud is really talking only about an Ashes Ish, and we say the reason for that is different. The reason why we make it with an Ashes Ish in the case of Yichud is because we don't want to be Moitzi Laz Abaneh. We don't want people to start saying, you know what, her children really are Mamzerim, her children up until now, that is. We don't want that, and therefore we're Makel on that. So how does that really apply? How does that really apply over here? So Tosfos ends up saying that yes, when we say over here ein oisrin ala yichud, it doesn't just mean an eishes ish. It does, as our Gemara is saying over here, it also includes this idea about a pnuya. It means, in other words, what does it mean that we're normally not machmir in it? It means we learned in Yevamos, for example, we said according to Rabbi Yeshua, we learned in Yevamos like this. We said, suppose you have a man has relations with a woman outside of marriage, oinus, pituri, whatever. Is he later on allowed to marry one of her relatives, like her mother or her daughter or so forth? We said Rabbi Yehuda says not. And the Chachamim say yes. What we're saying over here is, if this woman had only been secluded with this guy, then that Rav is saying, Ein oisrin ala yichud, we don't say, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, we would not say that her mother is now author to him on that basis, because of that yichud.
Not enough.
Not enough. But when it comes to Yuchzin, when it comes over here to allow her to marry a Kohen, that Rabbi Yeshua would say not. And even Rav might agree with that.
He's allowed to marry the mother.
No, I said
that
he's...
That we don't say, but the Kohen, she's not allowed.
Yeah, because my law is to be yuchsin. That's what we're saying. When it comes to the yuchsin, when it comes to making sure that Kohenim stay Kohenim, that they marry women who they're supposed to marry, we're machmer in that.
So we have two benefits. Protect the yuchsin, and we still don't bring a motzi shemra on the mother.
Well, the motzi shemra was something else. That was, we were saying, the haitzas shemra, the issue that Tosfos mentioned with haitzas shemra is talking about a married woman. If a married woman is in yichud with a man who's not her husband, we don't ask her to her husband just on the supposition that there might have been bia, because then you're going to be motzi laz, people are going to think that her previous children are also mamzerim, and you don't want to do that.
Not on any woman.
Right. Mesa, the Gemara says, Sir, Braitha says that if you see that if Edim saw a woman go into seclusion with a man, which is just Yichud, we're not talking Medin Sibia, or they see them go into a rune, a rune, a rune broke. broken down house, which is the kind of place where people would hang out to do illicit actions. And later on they ask her, Mativa Shal Ishzeh, who is this fellow? And she says, Koyenhu, Uven Achi Abahu, and he is, for example, she says, my son of my father, but my father's brother. Now, why would she be saying that? One idea is she might be saying that's why I was in seclusion with him, not for any illicit reason. We're cousins. We wanted to have a private conversation. So, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Eliezer, Imam Nemenes. So they say we believe her, and we don't consider her to be Pasul Lekorna. Rabbi Yeshua, Imam Lema Pion Chayin, and Rabbi Yeshua says, like he says in our Mishnah, that we don't necessarily believe what she says. Ela Harezes B'cheskes B'ulo L'nasen U'mamze, Achetavi Raya L'dvera. So it's basically the same as our Mishnah, except that it added this detail. The Mishnah just said Midaberes, which we said there's two possibilities what Midaberes means. The Braisa had clarified that we're talking about that she saw that we saw her going with him into a secluded area or into a room. So, what's the point? Bishleim Elizairi, according to Zairi, that our Mishnah Midaberes had meant Nistra, Hainu de Katani Tauti, La Seisa, or La Chorva. Therefore, we understand why the Braisa has to mention two cases where they were in seclusion or where they were in a room.
Why
two cases? Because the point is, seclusion just means like maybe a semi-secluded area. A chorva, a ruin, is much more secluded. Like nobody goes there. But according to Rav Asi, that in our Mishnah it meant there was Be'ila. According to Rav Asi, just stira, just being alone, is not enough, even according to Rav Yeshua, to cause a problem. Tavti lamali. So what do you need? Two cases. And the answer is, according to Rav Asi, you would say that the Braisa is talking about one case. Not in seclusion or in a ruin. It means they went in seclusion in a ruin, right? The question is, how could he say that? It clearly says, or. If it had said, okay, sometimes you even have, in Tanakh, you have sometimes where you have two words connected with a vav where it means this, namely this. But oy clearly means or. The answer is no, because you could say chod lachurba de masav, chod lachurba de davara. Because you could say the Braisa is distinguishing between whether they went into seclusion in a ruin that's in the city, or a ruin de davara that's out in the field. Now, what's the difference? The difference is like this. The difference is if the ruin is in the city, what kind of people are going to be there? Most likely, people from the city. Well, if it's a city, we'll learn later on Yerdalet and Tetzvav, if it's a city where most of the people are kosher Yisraelim, not Nesinim or Mamzeim or whatnot, then the chazaka is that the man that she was with was a Yisrael kosher, and therefore she'll still be kosher l'kohana. Whereas if it's the Dabra, if it's a Chorba de Dabra, if it's a ruin out in the fields, outside the city, anybody from the world could be coming there. Then, and most of the world is people who are apostle. It could even be a guy, yeah. So therefore, utzrichi, and therefore we need both those cases, according to Rabasi. The Iesh in and Churba de Masa, because if we were only told the one case of a ruin in the city, you would argue, Bahakamach Rav Gamliel, and you would argue that's why Rav Gamliel says she's still kosher, because at least most of the people who she could possibly have been with, not possibly, most of the people who it's likely that she was with, most of the people in that area are ksherim. But if it's out in the field, the Roy Psulim Etzla, where there most of the people who could possibly be there are Psulim, Ema Mardele Rabbi Yeshua, then he might argue they agree with Rabbi Yeshua that she's possible. And the other way, Vyashmin and Bahi, and if you only have the case of the Dabra, the ruin in the field, then you would say Bahi Kama Rabbi Yeshua, Ava Baha Ema Mardele Rabbi Gamliel, and you would say that's why Rabbi Yeshua is Machmir, because Roy Psulim Etzla, because most of the people out in the field are Psulim. But in the city, you would argue most of the people are ksherim. You should say that she's still kosher. Tzricha, therefore, we would need the both cases. So the Braisa is still not. So this Braisa is not a contradiction to Rabasi. According to Zairi, we would say that it means that it's not talking about two different kinds of ruins. We're just talking about regular seclusion versus a ruin. And according to in the ruin, it's more likely that there was Bila. And according to Rabasi, we'd be talking about in both cases, it's equally likely that there was Bila. But the real question is who might the man have been? Was he more likely to have been a kosher or more likely to have been an apostle? By the way, some of Farshim point out on the Mishnah, so we've been discussing the last couple of Mishnayos what the reason is why in each of these cases Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer believer. In the first Mishnah, we said we had three reasons, because we had Bari versus Shema, we had Chazaka, we had Migui. In the second Mishnah, we had Bari versus Shema. In this Mishnah over here, why exactly are Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer believing her? One idea that Mepharshim talk about is there is a chazaka over here, namely the chazaka that Jewish women usually are not going to be mizaneh with people who are apostle to them.
Even in
a room, yeah. Basically, the Gemara says I have a further contradiction against Rabasi's understanding. A Braisa says, it's in Tosefta, Zu Eidus Sha'isha Ksherla, that this case over here of our Mishnah is one of those cases where we believe a woman's Eidus when she's saying that the man I was with was a kosher, that according to Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer, we believe her. Rabbi Yeshua Imein and Emenes, because Rabbi Yeshua is arguing that we don't believe her. And continues the Braisa. So Amalahem Rabbi Yeshua, Iyatem Loidim B'Shvuya Shenishbeis, V'yeshla Eidim Shenishbeis, don't you agree, in the case of a woman who was taken captive by Goyim, and she has Edim that she was taken captive. V'hiya meres Taharani, but she's claiming I'm Tahar, I was not violated by any of the Goyish captors. She'ein an Emenes. You don't believe her. And we'll learn the details of that in the next Perek. And therefore, for example, if she's a Kohen's wife, she becomes also to him. Amrulai Aval, so they told him, indeed. Aval usually means but.
Right.
But there's a number of places in Shas where it uses the word aval to mean indeed. Rashi points out on Chumash also when Yosef's brothers, after the first time that they have a hard time with Yosef, when Shimon is put in jail and so forth, they say aval Hashem Manachnu. Doesn't mean but we are guilty. Rashi quotes over there that aval is an expression meaning indeed, in truth. So they say to him, indeed. So Rabbi Yeshua asks, "Umahe Peshif Yesh Ben Zulazu." So what's the difference between one case and the other? Why are you telling me that by the Shvuya we don't believe her, and here you want to believe her? So they answer him, "What's the difference? How can you compare Lazu Yesh Edim and Lazu Ein La Edim?" In this case, there are Edim that she was taken captive, and once there are Edim that she was taken captive, we have to assume that she was raped because the Goyim, Rashi says, are prutzim ba'arayas; they're very, very promiscuous. So Eidus that she was taken captive is pretty much tantamount to Eidus that she was in fact raped. Velozraimla Eidim, here we don't have Eidim that there was any Bila. Here all we have Eidim is that there was Stira. Well, that's what Rabbi Yeshua is asking. Well, no, so that's what the Chachamim are answering him. That's the difference. Not necessarily the Migui, but okay, in this case, there's no reason to think that there was any Be'ilah. But over there, the Goyim are Prutzim. Here, you don't necessarily have to assume that.
It's not a Migui.
No, it's not a Migui. It's actually, no, but it's the fact is, there's no Eidim. Yeah. Well, Amalahem, so Rabbi Yeshua answers them, Aphlazuyesh Eidim. In this case, there very much are Eidim. Sharek Trace Lichinia, because she's very pregnant. If she's pregnant, obviously she had relations. So why are you believing her to say then that the man she was with, the man she's pregnant from, is a kosher? Amrulai. So they answer him, the difference is, Roiv Ovid Kachavim Prutzim Ba'arayas, same. Because most Goyim are Parutz and Arayas. They're very promiscuous. Amalahen. And Rabbi Yeshua answers them. Now the Gemara is going to explain in a minute. The conversation seems to have kind of gone off the rails. Like they're talking things that don't seem to directly relate to each other. Amalahen. So he answers them, Ain apotropos la arayas. There's no watchman over arayas.
We mentioned
that briefly yesterday. We're going to get into in a minute what that means. So and the braisa continues. But med. That's the Gemara is going to explain in a minute what turn did the conversation take over here. Wait. And the Braisa continues, Bamed Ramamu the Eidus Isha Begufa, when is this machloikus between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua? If when we're talking about the Eidus of her herself, whether she herself remains kosher l'kohona, Aval, Eidus Isha Bebita, but if it's the woman giving Eidus about her daughter, Divrei Hakol Avlad Shesuki, then everybody would agree that the child is considered a Shesuki. Now, a Shesuki usually means, we learned about this in Yevamos, the main place the Gemara talks about in the last paragraph of Kedushin, usually a shsuki means a child who we know who the mother is and we don't know who the father is. And there's a concern that the father may be a mamzer or nosin or what have you, and therefore the child would inherit that status. We'll talk about soon in our Gemara over here whether that's what this means. But anyway, so first we have to understand my kamalahu, my kamahadrile. In the middle of that conversation, all of a sudden, when they start talking about what is he telling them and what are they answering him? What is that conversation? What's going on in that part of the conversation? Hachikam relates like this. They're telling him like this. You know what? You mentioned that the fact that she's pregnant effectively is the equivalent of Adris, that she had relations. Okay, they tell him. Heshavtanu alamu beres. Very well. You've given us a good answer that would apply to a woman who's pregnant. The second case of our Mishnah. Mata shivenu alamu daberes. What are you going to tell us about the first case where it was medaberes? We'll discuss in a minute. This is why we're bringing this in over here to prove or disprove Rav Asi's point where that medaberes means nivala. But what are you going to say about the medaberes? By the way, the interesting thing over here, they're saying over here, heshavtanu alamu beres. So does that mean that when it comes to a pregnant woman, the second case of our Mishnah, then they conceded and agreed with Rabbi Yeshua? But no, as a matter of fact, they still continue to hold their opinion, and the halacha is in fact like them. That even in the case of the Muberes, we still accept her argument that it was the Ish Klein of a Kohen, that she's kosher, and maybe as we'll discuss soon whether the baby is kosher. So what is it? If he gave them a good counter argument, why is that? So the Shita Mukubetzis talks about, he says, because what they mean is, you gave us a very good logical answer. But you know what? We have more than just logic. We have a Kabbalah from our Rebbeim.
The logical answer being
that once you're saying that a Shvuya is Osir, because we have to assume that one of the Goyish captors raped her, then yes, in this case over here where she's pregnant, where we know for a fact that she had relations, yes, we would have to assume that, we might have to assume that it was apostle. That's a very logical argument, but you know what? We don't just have logic. We have a Kabbalah from our teachers that said that she's still kosher in this case.
Why?
Why is it? If not, it's Kabbalah they had from their teachers. Is it logical? Not necessarily.
A little logical.
What? It's not. Maybe it's logical. It's one idea. Maybe it's logical because
it's the city.
No, the one. Yeah, it's the one difference could be because by the Shavuya, all the people around her are Goyim, whereas here they're Akshayim. Okay, but. There is the idea, the Shita Mekubetzis brings from Rabbeinu Tam an interesting idea. He says, for example, Rabbeinu Tam talks about the Gemara in Tzachin that mentions that the Chachmi Yisrael and Chachmi Umas Olam had an argument about how the heavens are structured. Galgo Kavur Mazolus Choizrin versus Mazolus Kavur and Galgo Choizir. We learned some talking about whether the Galgal, the celestial sphere, moves and the stars are fixed around the surface of it, or whether the stars move and the Galgal stays fixed in place. Anyway, the Gemara ends up saying over there that the Rebbe says, V'nirin divrei midvareinu. Their words, the words of the Goyish HaChachamim, seem to be more logical than ours, and he brings the proof.
That whatever
they say, that Galgal, Choizir, Mazolus Kavurin. The Chachmei Amos Olam say. There's different explanations of what exactly Galgo means and what exactly Mazolus means. Let's not get into that right now. The point is, Rabbeinu Tam says an interesting thing. Even though Rebbe is saying Nirin Dvarei Midivreinu, he doesn't mean, therefore, the Goyish HaChacham are right and we are wrong. He means, yes, they have a very logical argument, and here is a logical proof that you can bring to it. But the world doesn't just live. Our Kabbalah still stands. The world doesn't just live based on logic. Similarly over here, the Chachamim are saying to Rabbi Yeshua, yes, you have a very nice logical argument to compare a Shavuya to the second case of our Mishnah, Hoysimu Beres. Nevertheless, though, our Kabbalah still stands that we hold differently.
Don't we say
our Kabbalah is defied by logic?
We can't necessarily find a logical reason for it.
We can't prove
it right now, but...
Can they prove otherwise?
Doesn't matter though. The point is,
it certainly can, because then it's not.
No, but what we're saying, but, you know what? There's something in one of the Maimorim of the Frida Kaveba. I think it might be part of Bossi Lagani. I don't remember. There's a footnote from the Rebbe, and it brings over there the idea that sometimes a person knows something with Chochma in a way higher than Bina. Like they know it, but they can't express it. And he brings an example from a Gemara in Beitza, where Rav said a certain din. No, no, not in Liberal Poma, but a Shosik Rav over there, that they asked Rav on a detail in Hilchus Yomtov over there, what's the difference between this case and that? Shosik Rav, and Rav was silent, he couldn't find the answer, and yet the post came passing like Rav. And there is an example where Rav knew, he knew at the level of Chochma that the Halacha has to be like this. He couldn't find a reason that could be expressed in Bina to be able to draw it out and explain it. But nevertheless, he knew it, and the halacha ends up being like that.
So we didn't dispute with him.
So the same idea over here. Then the Chachamim, the Rabbi Gamliel, is saying to Rabbi Yeshua, we may not be able right now to find a logical disproof to what you're saying. Nevertheless, though, we still have our Kabbalah, and we'll keep on looking. We may yet find an answer. One of the answers could be yes, that by the Shavuya, all the people there are goyim versus over here, they're all kshavim over here.
But we don't generally establish the halacha.
No, we don't.
Kabbalah.
No, well, we do actually. No, of course, we establish a halacha based on Kabbalah. We have to if a Tana or an Amora has something for Kabbalah from his Rebbe, yeah, then yeah, that's what we're talking about. Yeah. Anyway, okay, so they tell them. So you have a good answer for Muberes. Mata Shibenu Alam Medaberes. What are you going to tell us about the Medaberes, the first case of our Mishnah? Amar Lahem, and Rabbi Yeshua answers them. Medaberes Hainu Shvuya. Isn't the case of Medaberes where she, again, we don't know at this point whether it means seclusion or bila. We're going to get to it in a minute. But there's no edim in that case. A shvuya, there's also no edim of the actual bila. So if you're going to tell me that a shvuya is pasul l'kavuna, because the fact that there's edim that she's a shvuya means automatically that there was bia, then you should argue the same thing by Medaberes. And they told him, "Shiny shvuya, the rabbi to come and put some bar eyes saying a shvuya is dip." This is so. Here we so the last couple of lines of their argument went like this so far. He argues that the pregnant woman has edim. In effect, the fact that she's pregnant is the equivalent of edim. So the chachamim say, "Fine, very well. Now, what about the medaberes?" And he's saying the medaberes, shouldn't that be the same as the shvuya? And that's where they're answering Amruloi in the Braisa, Roy Rebbe Chachamim, Prutzim Araisim. No, the difference is a shvuya, there's much more of a logical reason to think that there was a be'ila, because most goyim are Prutzim. Amalahem, and Rabbi Yeshua answers to them, what's the Ein Apotropos La'arayis? He answers them, Kivin de Istater, once they were secluded, Ein Apotropos La'arayis. There's no guardian over Arayis. Once they were in seclusion, yes, we have to assume that, there's a good reason to assume, at least, we don't have a basis to say Lo Nivala, that in fact, Be'ila did not have.
Another option.
Yeah.
What is the difference between Ein Apotropos La'arayis, or she was...
By going? That's what Rabbi Yeshua is arguing. There's no difference. The Chachamim are arguing there's a difference. The Goyim are Prutzim Ba'arayis. A Jew may hold himself back. Whereas Rabbi Yeshua is arguing, no, Ein Apotropos La'arayis. Once there was Stira already, there's good reason to assume that there was Be'ila. So what's the point? Katani mias tauti midaberes umuberes. So the Braisa clearly is distinguishing. The Braisa is not even talking about whether about the daughter. The whole discussion in the Braisa here between the Chachamim and between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua is over her herself. And you have the two cases, midaberes umuberes, tiyuta de Rabasi. That's a clear contradiction to Rabasi, because according to Rabasi, the second case of the mission of the Muberes is only about Bita. In the Braisa here, we see that Muberes is relevant to her herself. That's a contradiction. So therefore, we stick with Zairi's understanding that Medaberes in the Mishnah means Nistera, that they were secluded. Now, the Gemara asks, going back to this Machloikas, Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua, but typically, why doesn't Rabbi Yeshua himself think of the distinction to Hasam Roiv Psul Netzla, Vahacha Roiv Ksher Netzla? That, in the case, that the distinction we just said, that in the case of Shvuya, most of the people there are apostle, because most of them are Goyim, whereas in this case, over here, of Medaberes, most of them are Kasha. The answer is that's. By the way, that's Rashi's understanding of the question. Many other Rishonim point out that there's a problem with that understanding of it, because throughout Shas, usually the expression typically means why are we using this argument instead? We should use this argument. We don't usually use typically. Well, according to Rashi, typically means basically why is Rabbi Yeshua arguing the way he does? he should be accepting the argument the other way around, because there's a difference between Rav Kshayim and Rav Sulam. That's not what the Gemara uses typically usually to mean. Typically means should mean rather according to Rav Gamliel. Why are you arguing against Rav Yeshua based on why are you arguing against Rav Yeshua based on the fact that a Shavuya based on the question of Edim or not Edim or Roy Rav Kshayim Prutzim Barayas or not? Just say very simple. That in the case of the Shavuya, that's mostly Psulim, it's mostly Goyim. In the case of the Medaberis, it's mostly Kshedim. And that's why you're arguing against Rabbi Yeshua. Anyway, the answer is Messiah, the Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. The fact that we don't have that argument in the Braisa supports what Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says. To Amr Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, according to Rabbi Gamliel, who says that she's kosher, according to Rabbi Yeshua, who says she's posel, he would say she's posel afilu b'roiv kshedim, even if most people in the area are kshedim. So even you have a city where most of the people are kosher, and there's going to be a sugya about this on Tesvav, that according to Rabbi Yeshua, even if most of the people in the city are kosher, nevertheless, We have to be concerned that this person she was with may have been one of the psulim. According to Rabbi Gamliel, who says that she's kosher, then she's kosher even if most of the people in town are psulim. If most of the people are psulim, goyim or mamzerim or what have you, but she's claiming I was with one of the kshedim, we accept that. Not the Shavuya, no, because they, no, we're talking, yeah. The Divya Postal Philip Rav Kshedim, whereas the one who says she's possible, Rav Yeshua, says she's possible even if most people in town are Kshedim. So therefore we can't, according to Rav Yeshua ben Levi, is saying that, and we see that from this Braisa. We see that from the very fact that in this Braisa, Rav Yeshua or Rav Gamliel are not pointing out, you know what, there is a difference in the situation of the Shavuya versus the Menaberas. Because obviously they don't hold of that distinction. Now, further on this topic, this is what we mentioned on Omer Aleph, Omer Rav Yechanan, L'divrei ha-machshir b'machshir b'bita. Furthermore, according to Rav Gamliel, not only is she kosher, but so is her daughter. So again, in the case of the Muberes in the Mishnah, the daughter is also not considered to be the daughter of a mamzer or what have you. We don't even consider, forget about mamzer, where then the daughter would be a mamzer, we don't even consider, for example, that the man she was with may have been somebody who's possible a kahuna, and then who would passel her, such as a cholol, and therefore the daughter would be cholola and also marry a kohen. No, the daughter is allowed to marry a kohen. L'divrei ha-posel b'bita, whereas according to Rabbi Yeshua, that she's posel, so is her daughter. That's Rabbi Yochanan. But Rabbi Loza, whereas Rabbi Loza says, no, even Rabbi Gamliel, who holds that the woman herself is still kosher, holds the daughter as posel. Amar Rabbi Mai time at Rabbi Loza. What's Rabbi Loza's reason? Why he makes that distinction? The reason is bishleima. We said before bishleima ihi isla chazaka to kashers, because the woman herself has an original chazaka of being kosher to marry a kohen. The daughter doesn't. Yeah. Lebita lesla chazaka to kashers.
So okay.
Yeah. So what's Rabbi Yechanan and Svara Rabbi Yechanan and Svara Mestama was Rabbi Yechanan and Svara Mestama be? Okay, it's not just a matter of chazaka. If you're saying that the woman herself is kosher lekohana, it would be contradictory to say that the daughter is kosher lekohana. According to Rabbi Elazar, everybody agrees the daughter is possible. According to Rabbi Yechanan and Rabbi Gamliel would hold the daughter is kosher. Rabbi Yechanan would hold she's possible. So Rabbi Elazar asks Rabbi Yochanan a stira from a braisa. But medrum, we said before the braisa. But medrum remember edus isha begufa, that when is the machloekas Rabbi Gamliel versus Rabbi Yeshua? When we're talking about the woman giving edus about herself, whether she herself was with a kosher or not, and therefore whether she's kosher lekohana, aval edus isha bebitcha divrei hakol ablad suki. But we said before in the braisa that if she's giving edus on her daughter, everybody agrees that edus is not acceptable. We don't say that therefore we determine who the father is, and that's good enough. No, we say the child is a shtuki. My la shtuki or posel. Usually a shtuki means that they're posel. They're a suffolk mamzer. So then that shows that even Rabbi Gamliel agrees that the daughter is posel.
The issue says she's not pregnant, you believe her?
No. If she says she's not, we see her pregnant. Kreisa ben Shneir, we said before. We see she's very visibly pregnant. Come on.
But we can't say. He considers that the blood is kosher.
Yeah. So, if we're saying that everybody agrees that the child is a shtuki is posel. The answer is, why shtuki for kosher? No, it could mean that it's a shtuki, but they can still be kosher. What does that mean? Me ikash shtuki kosher? Where have you ever heard of such a thing? The answer is, ain't kiddushmul. Yes, we had, like Shmuel says, the Omer Shmuel, we learned this in Yevamos a couple of weeks ago, Asara Koyanim Oimdim, if you have 10 Koyanim standing around, Pirish Echad Mehem Uval, and one of them left the group and went and had relations with a woman, and we don't know which one it was, Havlat Shtuki, the child of a Shtuki. Now, my Shtuki, what do we mean, in what sense is the child of Shtuki? Now remember, we know that his father is one of these 10 Koyanim, so we know that he's a kosher. So what do we? In what sense is he a shtuki? Does it mean that we silence him if he demands a share in his father's inheritance and his father's estate? We tell him, be quiet. You don't have any proof. Well, I'm pshita. The fact is, we don't know which one of the 10 koyanim is his father. So obviously, there's no reason to say that. Ela, no. It means shemashtikin oisim adin kahuna. It means we silence him from the dinim of kahuna. So he is not a shtuki in the classical sense, in the sense that he's a suffolk mamzer, and therefore would be a question whether we can marry a Bas Yisrael or not. There's no question this kid is a kohen. But we prevent him from acting as a kohen. We prevent him from serving the mismikdash or eating truma or so forth.
He's a real shtuki, basically.
Right.
Shtuki for one purpose.
Just for one purpose. And therefore, so that's what we mean over here. When we said before, so that's Rabbi Yechanan is arguing. When we said before that Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua, that they all agree the child is a shtuki, we mean a shtuki of this kind. In other words, that we know the child is a kosher. There's no suffolk of mamzerus. No, not yichus. No, yichus he doesn't have because he doesn't know who his father is.
He's a kohen.
But we don't. But that's the thing. Wait, because the pasuk says v'hoyso loyal lazar. What we know who the mother is. Yeah. Yeah, because the mother,
the father we don't know, but
yeah.
We know the father's a Kohen.
Oh, right. No, in this case, we're talking about Asara Kohenim, Pirush Achanam of all, and he had relations with a woman, and later she gave birth.
Right.
So we know who the mother is. Derech Agav, by the way, the Zohar mentions that this is why in Tilim David refers to himself as Ani Abdechab Ben Amasecha. And in general, we know when you daven, when you say Tilim for somebody, when you say Mishaberach for them or whatever, you use the mother's name. The Zohar mentions one idea, because you always know who a person's mother is. The father, the can always be an episode suffix. So just to be on the safe side, so you have Dovish Shkodim in front of Evishter, you use the mother's name.
That doesn't say it.
Yeah.
You know, when a person passes away, you use
the
father's
name. But that's different, yeah, because there's because also the yeah. Anyway, so the Pasuk says,
can't help him anymore.
Yeah.
Can't help him anymore.
That it should be for him, for Pinchas and his descendants after him, as a covenant of kahuna forever. Meaning, the only kahuna can only apply to somebody who is children of miyuchas after him, where you know who their father is. As opposed to this case, where he's not miyuchas achrav. So yes, technically he should be a kohen, and he has the loitza says of a kohen. He can't become tami lames, etc. But we don't give him the privileges of a kohen. In that sense, he's a shtuki. According to Rabbi Yechon, and that's the kind of shtuki we mean here. Not a shtuki as in Suffolk Mamza, the usual meaning of shtuki, but in the sense that we prevent them from having certain privileges which only a miyuchas has, because the child's not a miyuchas. He's not a mamza, but he's not a miyuchas.
So we consider him as a kohen. We don't.
No, so we're saying that we consider this daughter, what we're saying is like this. We consider this daughter to be, so it means like this, in other words. If the child, when we're saying over here, this woman is pregnant, if she has a child, if this child is a boy, and we have some way of knowing that the father was a kohen, for example, this case over here with the 10 kohenim, or Pirush Achamem, nevertheless, we won't allow the child to act as a kohen. He is considered a kohen, but we won't allow him to act as one. And if it's a daughter, then she's not a shtuki in the sense of a suffolk mamzer, and she will be able to marry a kohen.
But if it's a boy and he marries his child, is going to be a kohen or not?
No, if he himself doesn't have yichus, the b'pashas neither does his son.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, their daughter could marry a kohen.
But their daughter, He's considered a kohen l'chumra, so he won't be able to marry a grusha or halala or whatever. His children b'pashas also won't be kohenim, yeah.
Right.